Listening Dog Media.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie, promoting women's football since 2013.
Another week, another Offside Rule podcast. You've got to put up with me sounding a little bit bunged up. I've had that seasonal cold that's been going around. What have you been doing?
Busy as always, Lindsay. Yeah, I've actually been down in London for a couple of days looking after my mum's dog, Arthur, for the weekend. So,
oh, I like the name Arthur for a dog.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. Little French bulldog. Been on some lovely walks with him. Lots of snuggles in the morning. So it's been really nice heading back up to Liverpool today.
And because it was international break, clearly when we're reflecting on results, we're going to decide to go for the Euro qualifiers. So we've got Group A, Group B. We've got a couple of games from there. I've chosen one from the FAWPL as well, which people won't be surprised to hear that I've chosen Wolves against Halifax. But what a result it was for them and what a week it's been for Wolves women. So we'll dip into that too. But on an international week, are you a little bit quieter or have you been working busy here, there and everywhere?
Yeah, no, I've actually been quieter, which has been nice. Yeah, so got to obviously watch the England game, was following the Wales game as well, obviously with Becky's role being a scout there. So it's actually nice to sit down and have a football weekend, watch the boys. That was really disappointing, obviously, against United. So that kind of put a downer on the weekend. But no, it's lovely when you can just sit back and actually watch the football from your sofa, a bit of a different environment to what I'm used to.
Yeah, see, that's what happened. That's how all this started with my germs. I was having too much of a relax. I was in a steam room having a nice swim. And I think that's where I picked up these damn germs. Anyway, we can reflect. It still didn't inhibit me from being able to watch the football. So England 1, Sweden 1 is the first match we're going to react to. The Lionesses back in what I would call more competitive action, because we've seen them play quite a few friendlies. But this is all for the Euro 2025 qualifiers. And Sweden, brilliant opposition. So I thought this was going to be a great test. What were your overall impressions of how England played?
Yeah, truthfully, I don't really feel like England have been firing on all forms recently, Lindsay, if I'm being completely honest. I think, obviously, since not making the Olympics, I just don't really see them having a kickstart from that. I think maybe they're still struggling from that disappointment. I think that when I watched them against Sweden, I was expecting more. You know, England are second in the world, Sweden are sixth, and obviously Sweden are a top team. I wasn't going to say this is just a walkover, but I expected more. And to be honest, I think England were actually lucky to get something out of the game. You know, Blackstenius, our favourite person. I know we talk about her a lot, but, you know, one-on-one with Mary Earps and doesn't even hit the target. You know, that was a massive lifeline for England and they could have come away with no points. And when you look at the group, France and Republic of Ireland, you know, this is one hell of a tough group. So maybe they'll see it as a good point taken, but deep down, I think England at home would have expected to have beaten Sweden, especially with how tough this group is.
Yeah, and we should remind everyone of the results. So it ended up being England 1, Sweden 1. Alessio Russo scored first. That was about the 24th minute. And then Sweden equalised in the second half. But I felt that the midfield was an area that we should dissect, because from a Lioness's point of view, you know, we've raved about Kira Walsh for so many years. Georgia Stanway's gone to Germany, to Bayern Munich, where she's one of the first names on the team sheet, has been really good. So we expect a lot from this midfield, but it did feel like that was the area that was really missing in this match.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, Lindsay, the issue could be the defensive line. I think when you look at the back four that won the Euros, you know, that solid partnership at centre-half with Yulia Williamson, your Millie Bright, you had Lucy Bronze, who's a regular, obviously, at right-back, and then Rachel Daly. I think the chopping and changing, you know, having lost those two centre-halves, I think has been a big issue. I think Alex Greenwood has been brilliant for England and for City, but she's been having different centre-half partnerships, you know, every game, the likes of Millie Turner coming in, Ruben Moy coming in, sometimes Jess Carter. I think Niamh Charles is brilliant, but probably still not got that senior experience at the top, top level. Mm. So I just think that's the issue right now. I think the midfield, definitely. I think won and lost that battle in the midfield the other day. But I do think the whole base of a team is your back four plus your goalie. You know, to have that regular back line that then almost gives you the foundations to build on. I think potentially, and now there's rumours that Leah Williamson is going to be starting next game against Republic of Ireland. You know, it's a big call to throw her in, obviously having, you know, I think it was a year now since she played last for England. And probably hasn't been getting regular 90 minutes football for Arsenal. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how she deals with taking that step now to international football. But yeah, I think that might be the area that England have been struggling with recently.
And it's the first time in a very decorated career I've started to see negative comments about Lucy Bronze. Mm. And whether maybe it is time to try and freshen things up or certainly create that element of competition, because she's so been secure in that position for a long time. I do wonder if there is something about that, but then that wouldn't buy into what you're saying, which is disrupting all these relationships. Maybe we do need some stability in that area. If you're talking about relationships as well and that knock-on effect to midfield, I mean, you might be right, because some of these relationships are brand new, as you say, they're disjointed, mm-hmm. or they're temporary. And maybe that's something in a mentality of a player that you think, this isn't who I'm going to be lining up against if we make the Euros. This isn't who I'm going to be lining up with if I do make the Euros. So maybe that's it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think as a player, you always like to feel like you can work on those partnerships. And I think it's through every unit, if you look, to be honest, even the front line, again, if you look at the Euros team, your Ellen White. Really, when I looked at the squads, Ellen White and Jill Scott are the only two people that have been removed completely. You know, everyone else is quite similar. There's a few new faces that have come in, you know, your Lauren Jameses, people like that. But even that front line, Russo's a brand new number nine. Isn't getting, you know, some games she starts for Arsenal, sometimes she doesn't start for Arsenal. You know, obviously she came up with a great goal the other day against Sweden. And that to me was where I'd love to see Russo more. You know, I think that Ellen White, what her main strength was, is she was a goal scorer that just loved to get in the box and score goals. She very rarely drifted outside of the goalposts, you know, and I think that's what your best number nines do, you know, especially with the likes of your Chloe Kellys, your Lauren Hemps, your Lauren Jameses, you know, they're full on out and out wide players. You don't need to get involved in the play. Sometimes I think Russo is a little bit guilty of maybe drifting and wanting to get too involved. And then maybe she isn't in the right place at the right time, but she was against Sweden. That's exactly what we want, is her with that header, you know, diving header. And that was brilliant. So again, it's that chopping changing of the front three as well. I just think, I don't know if Serena Wiegmann knows who her best 11 is right now. And I think in the past she did. I think in the past, we always used to say she would never change the starting 11. You kind of could guess what subs she was going to bring on. Right now, I'm not too sure she knows who her best 11 is. And maybe that's what the problem is.
I understand what you're saying about Jill Scott and Ellen White being the two main absentees from the last Euros, because the rest of the squad, if you forget injuries, they are available to choose from. But I also think that there's been some clear experimenting here. There are lots of positions up for grabs. I mean, would you say, other than, let's say, Lucy Bronze, Kira Walsh, Mary Earps, is every other position pretty much up for grabs?
Do you know what? I think Mary Earps is under pressure. I think that when you look at Hannah Hampton and how she's been performing for club level at Chelsea, potentially them going on to maybe win the title this year. I think the constant talk of Earps this season, is she staying, is she going? I don't think she's a nailed on starter either. I think she has been England's number one for a long time, and I'm sure Serena Wiegmann backs her as a number one. But I feel like she's feeling the pressure more now than she ever has. I think if you look at it, I think a Bright is a guaranteed starter. I think England have missed her massively, Millie Bright at centre half. I think the likes of her and her consistency, when she is fit, I think she is a nailed on starter.
Yeah, but it's about making sure that she's had that match fitness by the time we're talking about these
Euros.
Absolutely,
but but truthfully now, I think with the amount of competition that's in this team, even Akira Walsh, you know, her style of play, yes, you could say Stanway can drop in and do a role there, but probably no one can do the role like Kira Walsh does. But when you look at now the likes of your Kirby's, your Toons, your Grace Clinton's, your Jess Parks, there's so much more competition now in that midfield that potentially now these regular players like your Walsh's and Stanway's are under more pressure. And I think, do you know what, it's a good thing. I think there's more pressure everywhere now. I think your Lucy Bronzes is under pressure. I think all you're seeing, your Leah Williamson isn't just guaranteed to be walking in and getting a start depending on how she does next game against Republic of Ireland. I even think Russo, the amount of time she plays at Arsenal, you know, her goal scoring rate with the likes of your Dailies on the bench that's still been scoring at club level. I think it's exciting. I think Hemp, for me, is probably one of the kind of hands-on guaranteed starters. Chloe Kelly sitting on the bench now, you know, at club level and at international level. You know, she's such a top player. Yeah, I think it's great because maybe in the past, you know, you could pick your starting 11 and it was maybe a bit too easy for these players. Whereas now, your Beth Mead, who, you know, had such a good Euros, is she a guaranteed starter now? I think it's good to see, but I also think there needs to be some consistency now to then start getting better performances.
Yeah, and it's either about getting those older players that have been established and had that senior experience back up to a level because they've been away through injury. That's the case with a lot of them, and making sure they're back where they were. Or it's about trying something a bit different and having that air of unpredictability for the opposition. But a word quickly on Sweden before we move on then. What did you make of their tactics in this match? And they came in, I felt like they let England play for a while and then realised, oh, there's something in this for us.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I think that England had the better of the first half, but then I think Sweden, like you said, they had to turn it on. And I think second half they did turn it on. And I think their game plan was a lot better. You know the way England and Sweden are going to go up against each other. England will probably have more of the possession, but Sweden are so dangerous on the counter with the likes of your Blackstenius. You know, I think it suited their game plan playing against England. And like I said, they probably should have gone on and won it. Yeah, I was really impressed with Sweden, Linz, to be honest. And I think that they'll be definitely challenging England with regards to England obviously being the holders of the Euros. I think Sweden would definitely be one of the teams that are favourites to go on and win that also.
So that's where we're at with England and Sweden, seeing them as real contenders. But in the race to qualify, if we dip into Group B, Croatia, Wales 4-0 winners in the game that you've chosen here. And under new management, I mean, what was your thoughts about where these sides sit?
Well, I'm excited for Wales football, if I'm being completely honest. I love what I saw from the sideline, but also on the pitch. I think Rhian Wilkinson brought a real energy from the sideline as a manager. Canadian, ex-Portland Thorns manager, so plenty of experience. Very different managerial style to Gemma Granger. And we have to give credit to Gemma Granger because what she's done to get this Welsh team to where they are, it's almost like now she's put this team in Rhian Wilkinson's hands and said, here you go. You have a good, strong squad. You've got young players coming through. You've got the experienced players of your Jess Fishlocks, your Rachel Rose, your James, your Angra James, Ingalls, all these players that have been there. But now the big question is, right, qualifying. You know, these players now, it's probably your Jess Fishlock's last chance, really. You know, they have to make it. You know, someone of Jess Fishlock and her quality and what she's done for the women's game and what she's achieved, you know, domestically, she has to be qualifying for a major tournament. And from the start to the finish, they dominated Croatia. really strong second half in particular. Jess Fishlock was man of the match. You know, she ran the show, got her brace. It was her 150th appearance next game against Kosovo. So she's one away from 150 for Wales. And she's actually only two goals away from breaking Helen Ward's all-time leading goal scoring record. So, you know, what a player. But what I loved as well is, because I'm quite committed to Wales now, especially with Becky's role as a scout. So I definitely pay a bit more interest to how they do. Is that what I noticed probably more so with the new manager, Rhianne Wilkinson, is the opportunity she gave to the younger players. In the past, I think maybe Gemma Granger's been a bit guilty of playing the same 11 and trusting her senior heads. Whereas Rhianne Wilkinson actually said after the game, if I don't give these young players an opportunity to play, how, when I need them in the major tournaments, in the big games, are they going to be ready if I don't trust them now? So this is the perfect time to give them the minutes. And she brought on Mary McAteer, Lois Joel, who we've spoke to on the pod in the past. And they had great impacts. They came off the bench around 60 minutes. They came on for the last 30. And they brought so much energy. So I'm really excited. I think it's a really positive start for Wales. Clean sheet, four goals. And, you know, I think maybe this could be the year.
One thing to tap into that I noticed, and I wonder whether you can confirm with Becky, because this is just a bit of a hunch that I've had, but it felt like a really long training camp. And to begin with, I thought, oh, that's Rhianne Wilkinson coming in, probably new, wanting to get to know all the players, having a bit longer with them. But actually looking at the way that she's been speaking, I think this could be something that she does a lot, is have an extended training camp, because we've spoken about it on this show that the Wales players, they all play in different countries, all the senior players. Only one of them plays in Wales for the under 19s or under 21s, I think it is. So pretty much all of those senior squads are disjointed. They're all over the place. So bringing them together for longer means she gets to gel them for longer. And I just thought, oh, maybe this is the key for Wales, is that they have longer training camps together.
Yeah, I think it's a spot on idea, because they probably don't come together as much as maybe some other nations do. And I think you're right. New manager, new philosophy, new ethos, new ideas. You know, they have to kind of gel and bond and hit it off from the start, or as quick as possible to hit the ground running. And like you said, with the travel times, a lot of players now are playing abroad in the likes of America as well. So giving them maybe an extra couple of days to get over jet lag. Well, it definitely worked against Croatia, put it that way. They looked fresh, they looked hungry, they looked energised. And yeah, like I said, I'm very excited to see where this Welsh team can go. And I was impressed with Rhianne Wilkinson. I liked her energy on the sideline. I liked her interview after the game. She comes across really well. And obviously, she's already had a great impact.
And how about Croatia? Are they going to have an uphill battle trying to qualify?
Yeah, if I'm being completely honest, Lindsay, I didn't see anything or not enough to help them qualify. No, I think there's just too many strong nations right now with better players, if I'm being completely honest.
Well, that's our reflection on Group A and Group B, the first round of matches for European qualification. And there are more matches this week, Tash. As you said already, Jess Fishlock in line to get 150th appearance for Wales, which is just incredible. And yeah, what a stalwart she's been for that side. And we'll get to reflect a little bit, I suppose, on next week's show, although we're back into league action again quite quickly at the weekend. My pick comes from the FA Women's Premier League, where we know that Newcastle are running away with things. But actually, at the looking at the table and the amount of fixtures just for this final run-in, Wolves women, I've chosen them not just because I'm a Wolves fan, but because this result over Halifax 5-1 was their third win in a week. So that's 9 points they've managed to secure. And if you look at the table, they're in fourth, but they have got a game in hand on most of the sides above them. They've got two games in hand on Newcastle, although they won't get anywhere near them. But what impresses me about this Wolves team, Tash, is you just can't predict where the goal scorers are going to come from. Yes, they've got Hughes up front, who's been brilliant for them. But Sophie Bramford was the player of the match in this game, came off the bench, scored two goals. One of those goals is being tipped as one of the ones of the season, certainly for Wolves. So she could be getting an award at the end of season dinner for that strike. But yeah, I just really like the way that they're attacking this end of the season run in, because you want to be having that momentum, don't you, to take into next campaign as well.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think that's so key. And when you look at the table, obviously Newcastle are flying. They're 10 points clear with 52 points. Burnley sit in second, then it's Forest, and then Wolves in fourth place. And yes, they're a good, 9 points behind Forest. But I think you're right, Lindsay. You know, you want to finish the season as strong as possible. You know, will there be more investment? I think Wolves have been quite vocal about that potentially next year. And can they be the team, you know, your Forest, your Burnley, your Wolves, West Brom, Stoke, Derby, who's going to be the new Newcastle next season? Who's going to be the team that's going to be getting promoted? So, you know, I think it's all there for them. You know, they've got the men that are doing well in the Premier League. So, you know, why not? Like, you can see what Newcastle have done with a little bit of backing. You know, I think that there's rumours about Burnley and Forest potentially going kind of full-time, part-time, almost like a hybrid model. So, yeah, it's exciting to see, but they definitely are 15 goals in three games. That is impressive. I think they would have been disappointed to not kept a clean sheet, conceding so late in stoppage time. Would have been disappointing for them. But no, credit to them there. To have two away games as well in a week and to come away with three wins, I think that says a lot about the team.
That's one of the things that I really like as well about the manager, Dan McNamara. He values those clean sheets immeasurably. And you can tell that he understands if you build on that, that's what gets you promotions. Mm. You need to have a really solid defence. And if you look at the full-time interview with Dan McNamara after this game, bearing in mind that Wolves won 5-1, it sounds like they lost. He's really, really disappointed with that late goal being conceded. And he didn't feel like the performance at times was good enough. And that's talking off the back of a 5-1 victory. So I do really like him. And I do think that Wolves, for the future, they've got a lot to do because they've got a lot of competition. But I think they need to carry this momentum on. And they want to be a top three side consistently. And then one year, they might just do it. They might just go up. So that's our FA Women's Premier League. We will have more matches that we reflect on in next week's show. On to In the Spotlight next, where we're going to speak to David Astill about a one-club mentality in terms of playing styles.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie. Promoting women's football since 2013.
David, thank you very much for joining us for this week's In the Spotlight on the Offside Rule. You wrote an article recently for Total Analysis and it caught my attention. In fact, you often tag me in a few of your articles, so I like to have a glimpse every now and again. And this in particular spiked some interest. You've been discussing how clubs can implement a singular playing style across both men's and women's football. And I think that will really buy into a lot of people's ideas that we look at the Premier League clubs and them having an affiliated women's team and we think of a certain style of play and we think, does that actually apply to both the men's and women's teams? And this is something that you've written about. So can you just explain what that article's premise was and what point you were trying to get across?
Yeah, so basically it was something that sparked my interest a few months ago, and I sort of started to notice little similarities between the way that certain teams played, the men's and women's teams. And I thought, actually, there are some clubs that look like they are trying to create a joint brand, and there are some that have been quite open about trying to do that, some that almost have been doing it a little bit by accident, if you like, just randomly sharing ideas. So it was a case of almost highlighting that and showing that, you know, in the future, as the women's game continues to grow, that actually there is this potential for clubs to really kind of form a joint tactical brand, if you like, and share ideas and then potentially use that to get joint success. And that's kind of what the article is all about, really.
And Tash being on with us and being a Liverpool fan, I think we should use that as an example. So for Liverpool, there's a high press nature to the men's team. That's how Jurgen Klopp's teams play. It's very much high intensity. And so you're saying that in the future, Matt Beard would be doing the same with the women's team. Do we want that? Do we want that crossover? Or is there value in having not one set brand, but an identity per men, per women's team, rather than it being across the whole club?
I think it comes down to what each club wants, really. I mean, Liverpool are probably one of the examples where you wouldn't necessarily see that, because you've got Jurgen Klopp, who, as you say, is, you know, the aforementioned gegenpressing and all that sort of stuff. And then you've got Matt Beard, who's kind of much more kind of using the wing backs and trying to build, you know, through keeping the ball and everything. So they don't necessarily share ideas. But then you've got clubs like Spurs, where you can see the fact, like I think I said in the article, that you can see both clubs prefer to use, you know, wide threats. You've got Grace Clinton and Timo Werner, for example, both whom have quite key roles in terms of operating in those wide areas. You've got the use of ball playing centre backs, Mickey van der Ven in the men's side of things, and this season at least Molly Bartrip in the women's side of things. So you can see, that's what I mean, but you can see there's little similarities. You can see that actually those are the signs that they are trying to almost mirror each other. But it won't work for everyone, and I'm not saying it will, and I'm not saying this is the way that everyone has to go, because for some clubs it won't be. It just depends on, you know, the men's team might have one direction they want to go, the women's team want to go another direction in terms of tactics and what they're looking for. And it will come down to how each is perhaps funded and is able to cope in terms of that side of things as well. So, you know, the men's side of things might be able to go and afford a big manager, and the women's team might be struggling and only able to get a, you know, someone who's not really as experienced at the top level of the game. So there's a multitude of different things that will come into consideration, but it's certainly the case from what I've found in that article that there are more clubs than people think that are almost going in this direction, where they're almost sharing ideas, and you know, they see it as the future. So, you know, it was something that I found really interesting, and I felt actually a lot of people might like to hear about if the world's already aware of it.
Huge thank you to David Astill from Total Analysis. You can read that article in full online. I will make sure that I retweet it. Yeah, really interesting. And you will get the entirety of that interview dropping down your feed later on this week. We just gave you a sample in this show. On to Tash's scouting report for this week. And you've already been keeping eyes on other players. I don't know how you're keeping on top of everybody, Tash, because you're here, there, everywhere. You're telling me about different players. Who have you got this week?
I think you're going to be really happy with me, Lindsay, because I'm giving you a centre-half to talk about. Yeah, so really excited. Another Dutch player. My best friend, Caroline Rasch, she works for PSV. So she's been giving me a lot of Dutch players to watch. And she actually said this player is called Verl Berman. So Verl Berman, she's 17 years old. And she only recently signed for PSV. So she's actually been playing with boys up until recently. But she signed for PSV, and straight away she is already playing for them. She's already in their starting 11 at 17. And PSV are a top team in the Dutch league. You know, it's not like they're a mid-table team. You know, they're a team that are fighting for Champions League football. So I think that says a lot. So I spoke to my friend and asked her what she liked. She's left-footed, very quick. Really mature playing style for her age. So really, really strong player. Has a real presence about her. I actually had a little look. She recently went away with the Netherlands under-19s and they won 10-0 over the weekend. So, you know, a bit of a great result for them. I guess clean sheet for her as well as a centre-half. But yeah, that's a centre-half for you. And I actually wanted to touch on Lindsay. Sorry to take the limelight off of Verl Berman, but just to let you know that Tash's scouting reports are doing pretty well, because I think about a month ago we touched on a Swedish player called Kafaji, if you remember, from Häcken. Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to say that she is everywhere on social media at the moment with regards to rumour mill. She's heavily linked with Real Madrid. Apparently, ooh, NWSL want her, W League want her, WSL want her. And so I actually looked into her story a little bit more, because it's actually a really cool story. So her parents fled Iraq during the war, and she was actually going to come to England, but instead they ended up going to Sweden. So she could have actually played for England. But yeah, I also wanted to throw it in there that she came on against England the other day, and she was on for a minute, and she assisted Rolfo for her goal. So just want to say, Tash's scouting reports, I'm bringing the goods.
You are bringing the goods. I love this section of the show every week. There is the scouting report for this one, though. We'll go back to the Dutch PSV defender, Val Berman, 17 years old, one to keep an eye on. Thank you very much again for this week. We will have the mailbag coming out on Friday. Make sure you give us a follow at Offside Rule Pod on Instagram, on X, and we're also on TikTok. We'll keep you updated with what's going on in the show in the final few weeks. There's not many to go, Tash. Have a good one ahead, and I'll speak to you next time.
Thank you very much.
The Offside Rule. This is a Listening Dog Media production. Sports Social Podcast Network.